Good day. My name is Toby Jordan. Welcome to another episode in the podcast series brought to you by the Business Rescue, Restructuring and Insolvency Sector at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr. Today we will discuss a recent judgment which was handed down in the CNA Business Rescue proceedings. It dealt with a rescission of a perfection order. We will start off by briefly explaining the facts of the matter and will then be joined by a senior business rescue practitioner, Mr. Pahlani Nkombo of Genesis Corporate Solutions, to discuss the practical effects of the judgment and the stranglehold that a perfected material bond places on a business rescue.
Good morning. My name is Mwanwa Ramanyini. I am an associate in the Dispute Resolution Department at CDH and also part of CDH's Business Rescue, Restructuring and Insolvency Sector. As Toby has already said, today we'll be discussing the CNA Operations and Anglo Wealth case. This was an urgent application brought by the business rescue practitioners of CNA and others. The respondents in this case were Anglo Wealth, the previous business rescue practitioners of CNA, and the companies at Intellectual Property Commission. The facts of the case were as follows. In January 2021, Anglo Wealth entered into a cost-plus financing agreement with CNA for an amount of 30 million rand. A general notarial bond over the movable assets of CNA was registered in February 2021 as security for the agreement. On 2 June 2021, CNA commenced business rescue due to cash flow problems. Naturally, Anglo Wealth, as a secured creditor of CNA, decided to bring an application in terms of Section 133(1) of the Companies Act to perfect their loan. CNA and the previous business rescue practitioners initially opposed the application, but eventually consented to judgment on 15 July 2021. The order that was consented to by the former BRPs prevented the BRPs from being able to sell assets that were subject to the perfected bond. On 11 August 2021, barely a month after the order was granted, the previous business rescue practitioners resigned, and the new or current business rescue practitioners were appointed on 12 August 2021. Due to the restrictive nature of the court order, the new BRPs sought to renegotiate the terms of the order with Anglo Wealth. After some back and forth between the new BRPs and Anglo Wealth, the renegotiations failed, and the business rescue practitioners approached the court together with CNA, the employees union, and other interested parties for the rescission of that court order. The business rescue practitioners' argument was that the order is highly prejudicial to the affected persons in that they could not sell the business assets unless the entire debt to Anglo Wealth was paid, and they could not use the proceeds of the sold stock to pay for any other expenses. Anglo Wealth opposed the application and denied that the order created any preference in its favor and argued that the preference was already created in terms of the finance agreement. This discussion will focus on three legal questions that were raised in the case. I'll briefly highlight the legal questions and my colleague Jessica will dive in deeper. The first legal question was the rescission of judgment test. The second legal question before the court was what an affected person is in terms of Rule 42(1) of the Uniform Rules of Court. The third legal question deals with the obligation to give notice of legal proceedings to creditors or other affected persons. A question of interest that arises from this case is what rights does a creditor or any other affected person have to oppose a perfection application by a secured creditor? This will be discussed in detail later on by Lucinda Rudy and business rescue practitioner Pahlani Nkombo. For now, Jessica will take the conversation further to discuss the legal questions. Jessica, over to you.
Thank you, Mwanwa. As Mwanwa mentioned, my name is Jessica and I'm an associate in CDH's Dispute Resolution Department, as well as part of the CDH's Business Rescue, Restructuring and Insolvency Sector. So as mentioned, in coming to its decision, the court had to consider a few pertinent legal questions, these ultimately emanating from the ultimate question relating to the basis for the rescission and the point of law. In considering this, the first legal question that was brought, you know, before the court was that of the rescission of judgment test. Rule 42.1A of the Uniform Rules of Court provides for instances of a request for rescission. The rule states that the court may, in addition to any other powers, it may have mirum motu, or upon the application of any party affected, rescind or vary any order or judgment erroneously sought or erroneously granted in the absence of any party affected thereby. Our courts have then over the years expanded on the above and identified the crisp requirements that one has to prove in order to obtain a rescission of judgment. These are, firstly, the judgment must have been erroneously sought or erroneously granted. Secondly, such judgment must have been granted in the absence of the applicant. And lastly, the applicant's rights or interests must be affected by the judgment. Once having determined these elements to prove or in order to entertain a rescission application, the court then had to turn to determine the second legal question, which was whether the applicants were an affected person entitled to bring such an application. The BRP's case was that the creditors, employees, and holders of security of CNA are affected parties for the purposes of Rule 42.1A. The BRPs relied on sections 144, 145, and 146 of the Companies Act, which deal with the rights of employees, creditors, and holders of issued securities of a company in business rescue. The provisions essentially provide that the employees, creditors, and holders of security of a company in business rescue have the right to be issued with a notice of court proceedings and to participate in such proceedings. The court accepted this argument. The third legal question then follows, which deals with the obligation to give notice to creditors or affected persons. In answering this legal question, the court quoted Harms, stating that an order is erroneously sought if there was, for instance, no proper notice to the absent party, irrespective of whether the order or judgment is otherwise correct. It was agreed between the parties that the obligation to notify the other creditors of the initial perfection application was that of the previous BRPs, who did not do so. The right provided for in sections 144, 145, and 146 of the Companies Act to be given notice and to subsequently participate cannot be separated and would be redundant if there was then no obligation on somebody to notify them of the court proceedings. If the affected parties are not given notice and do not participate, the court held that any judgment then given is one granted in the absence of those affected parties. In the instance, the court held that the perfection judgment was given in the absence of affected parties, which was an error, and the judgment fell then to be rescinded in terms of Rule 42A. I now hand over to Lucinda, who will be guiding us with further discussion of this case.
Thanks, Jessica. Good morning, everybody, and welcome specifically to Bahlani for joining us. As Jessica said, my name is Lucinda Ruedi, and I'm a director in the Dispute Resolution Department of CDH and also a member of CDH's Business Rescue, Restructuring and Insolvency Sector. Bahlani, again, thank you for joining us, and I think we need to get right into it. So I think to start off, maybe we can discuss what grounds, if any, there is, especially for a BRP, to oppose an application to perfect a general notarial bond by a creditor brought after the commencement of business rescue proceedings.
Good morning, Lucinda, and good morning to the rest of the CDH team. As Lucinda and Toby said during the introduction, my name is Bahlani Mkombo. I'm the Senior Business Rescue Practitioner from Genesis Corporate Solutions. So Lucinda, one of the, you know, nightmares for, or the biggest nightmares for any business rescue practitioner in any business rescue, it's whether there is a secured creditor who has perfected or not perfected. Because once a creditor has perfected, its security, be it a special notarial or a general notarial bond, it becomes practically impossible to run that rescue successfully, because you will have a creditor or a secured creditor who had perfected its security with sort of in a much stronger secured position, and not willing to participate or to agree to dilute his security because he's in a much stronger secured position. So basically, one of the first things that if it happens as a practitioner that you find yourself in a position where a creditor brings an application to perfect the application, the first thing that you need to do is to oppose the application, or either approach your creditors or the affected persons as it's generally called under business rescue in terms of section 128 to take the mandate, because remember, business rescue is a creditors driven process. So as a practitioner, you speak on behalf of the creditors, and it is important that you run the process in an open and transparent process, rather over communicate than not communicate at all. So you need to make sure that you communicate with your creditors. There are a lot of channels to communicate. You can, depending on the size of the rescue, if it's a big rescue, you will have your employees committee, you'll have your creditors committee, you will have other committees within the whole rescue to communicate. So it becomes easy to communicate. But one of the things that a practitioner must do is firstly to oppose, and the ground is that it will then prefer the one creditor over the other, because that creditor, when the business rescue commences, he was not a secured creditor, or the security was not perfected, but the perfection will then elevate him and differentiate him from the other creditors, and which will then result in a preferential treatment of some sort.
I agree with you. And I mean, if one looks at the order that was initially granted by the court, it was a very restrictive order. The court basically found that the business rescue practitioners cannot even sell stock, and effectively it stopped, or it bound the business rescue practitioners' hands from effectively trading. So, do you agree? Were the court ever justified in placing such a severe restriction on the BRP's activities?
Yeah. So, it's one of the questions that when I was going through the facts, and I asked myself, because once a creditor has is in a much stronger secured position, it becomes impossible or the creditor will be reluctant to relinquish his security for the benefit of all the other creditors. Remember, Section 7K of the Companies Act states that the business rescue proceedings must be run in a balanced manner and in the interest of all creditors. So one of the things that you will need to do is avoid a situation where you find yourself not being able to continue operating, because with a perfection, it limits or severely, hampers your ability to continue trading, which will at the end affect your reasonable prospects. Because if the creditor decides that they no longer want to cooperate or play ball, then it becomes impossible for the practitioner to continue trading in the normal, in the ordinary course of the business.
Yeah, and I mean, that will then ultimately lead, if that's the situation, it will just ultimately lead to the, the liquidation of the company. And that's what everybody wants to avoid. But I think, just maybe a final question. This judgment obviously has several practical implications, because it confirmed that there's a duty on the BRP to notify a vast majority or a vast number of interested parties whenever litigation in relation to the business rescue proceedings commences. You did previously mention how transparent the process must be, but I think it would be useful for our listeners just to know what steps a BRP can take in order to keep all affected parties up to date and notified of, for instance, litigation proceedings.
Yeah. So thanks, you send it. So basically, one of the things is that the credit, the BRP must always communicate with the creditors or all the other affected persons. As I mentioned earlier on, once a practitioner is appointed, he needs to communicate with the creditors and notify or rather all the affected persons. Now, in a case where there is a creditors committee, it becomes easy to engage. And in the case where there is an employees committee as well, it becomes easy to communicate with the employees. But from a practical perspective, there are a lot of channels that can be used. You can always, you know, send out circulars appraising the affected persons of the latest development in the business rescue proceedings. In other cases, you can even upload the documents on the company's website, where creditors will be encouraged or affected persons will always be encouraged to visit the website to check what is the latest development. But apart from that, there is an obligation and a duty from the BRP to always make sure that he keeps his all the affected persons informed of all the proceedings, not only the rescission applications, but any legal proceedings and any other developments in the business rescue proceedings.
Yeah, I mean, we were involved in this CNA business rescue, and I mean, interestingly enough, they also here formed suppliers committees. You know, suppliers that were not necessarily creditors, but that's just for some information. But thank you, Khlani, for joining us. We're unfortunately running out of time, but thank you for your valuable contribution, and thank you also for all our listeners. And we wish you a happy festive season. Stay safe, and we will be back early next year with our next installment. Goodbye.
Thank you, and goodbye.